Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Miracle Treat Day helps. Participating Dairy Queen locations in West Texas will come together to raise money for Medical Center Health System today. A press release stated, on Miracle Treat Day, $1 or more from every Blizzard treat sold at participating locations will be donated to Children's Miracle Network Hospitals, which raises funds and awareness for 170 children's hospitals across the U.S. and Canada. Funds raised will help support children who have overcome many challenges thanks to the treatment they received at Medical Center Health System. Donations collected on Miracle Treat Day will directly help MCHS fund equipment, provide training for the staff and research for the NICU and pediatric units. Last year's Miracle Treat Day raised more than $6,000 for Medical Center Health System. Since 1994, the Dairy Queen brand has raised nearly $150 million for CMN hospitals across the United States and Canada through fundraising efforts including Miracle Treat Day, the Miracle Balloon Campaign, and other local initiatives. To help celebrate Miracle Treat Day, people are encouraged to use hashtag Miracle Treat Day on social media and invite others to join them in visiting a participating Dairy Queen location today. For more information about Miracle Treat Day, visit MiracleTreatDay.com. City approves a $75,000 settlement for auto collision. The Odessa City Council unanimously approved a $75,000 settlement agreement for pre-litigation of an auto collision involving an Odessa Police Department vehicle and Patricia Flores. The settlement approval happened Tuesday night on the fifth floor of City Hall in the City Council chambers located at 411 West 8th Street. Senior Assistant City Attorney Dan Jones detailed to Council the collision happened at 7:25 p.m. June 17, 2020 in the 2100 block of East 8th Street. Jones said the OPD vehicle collided with the driver's side of Flores's vehicle. Jones said due to the collision, Flores sustained substantial injuries. Unlike the City of Odessa's previous settlements, this does not have a cause number and hasn't been filed in a court of law, Jones said as he addressed City Council members. Jones said the pre-litigation settlement was negotiated on behalf of the City of Odessa by Permian Claims Service. Jones said this is official because the parties agreed to resolve the matter without litigation. The City Council also approves 6-1 the donation of a 7.65-acre tract to the Odessa Housing Finance Corporation located on Rochester Avenue on the south side of Odessa. The housing would be for low to moderate income families. Prior to the approval, Midland Habitat for Humanity Executive Director Joey Hopkins spoke to council that he felt disappointed as his nonprofit organization was left out of the conversation. He hopes in the future that Midland Habitat for Humanity can be in the discussion. The donation's lone nay came from District Council Member Steve Thompson. He said it's a worthy project but can't get behind it, as he believes it's helping someone get into business in Odessa at the city's expense. Thompson spoke with the Odessa American after the city council meeting and explained his nay choice further. OHFC brought Roads USA to the table to do the housing and build it, Thompson said. There weren't any other options. Habitat for Humanity is out there, and they weren't even considered. That bothered me a little bit. Roads USA doesn't have to pay for the land. They don't have to pay for the infrastructure. They just get to go build houses. Local news roundup. Man charged with striking cousin with vehicle. A 47-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly struck his cousin with his Suburban. Kelvin Calicut was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. The reported assault happened 10:21 p.m. July 19th at the 3400 block of Brazos Avenue, and Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit stated. Officers reportedly made contact with a victim identified as Daryl Stevens, who said he was assaulted by his cousin Calicut. Stevens detailed to officers that he and Calicut were in an argument over a civil matter that led to a physical altercation. The affidavit stated, Stevens stated that Calicut had assaulted him and struck him with a vehicle, which caused injuries. The officers reportedly saw Stevens to be in severe pain and unable to stand on his feet. Stevens also had fresh injuries at his knees. A witness identified as Tony Smith stated he saw Calicut strike Stevens with a vehicle, the affidavit stated. The vehicle was reported as a possible white SUV or Suburban. Investigation showed that Calicut had a registered 2007 Chevrolet Suburban to him. Investigation showed that Stevens and Calicut were in a fight, which led Calicut to intentionally or knowingly assault Stevens with a motor vehicle, which could have caused serious bodily injury or death, the affidavit detailed. Calicut was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on October 25th, jail records show. He has one bond totaling $30,000 and was still in custody as of Wednesday afternoon. Man charged with dragging ex-girlfriend. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed a 22-year-old man was arrested after he dragged his ex-girlfriend after she got stuck in the door of his truck. John Anthony Aguayo was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. Officers responded around 8:38 p.m. October 12th in the 4500 block of North Texas Avenue in reference to an unknown problem, the affidavit stated. Upon arrival, officers were reportedly flagged down in the area of 46th Street and McKnight Drive by the victim, identified as Desiree Lopez, who stated that an argument occurred inside a black 2014 Chevrolet Silverado. Lopez stated she was sitting in the front passenger seat and her ex-boyfriend, identified as Aguayo, was driving, the affidavit detailed. Lopez stated Aguayo told her to get out of his truck. Lopez stated she didn't get out of the truck and then attempted to open the back door of his truck to get her baby out. Lopez reportedly told officers that she got stuck in the door while Aguayo drove off at a high rate of speed, dragging her for a short distance. Lopez stated she was screaming for Aguayo to stop, and he didn't stop, so she let go of the truck before getting dragged further. Lopez stated she had road rash on her right shoulder area, cuts on her forearm, and a cut on her ankle, the affidavit stated. Officers saw Lopez to have road rash on her right shoulder area, cuts on her forearm, and a cut on her ankle, which was consistent with her story of getting dragged by Aguayo's truck. Aguayo was reportedly located shortly after at an apartment in the 4500 block of North Texas Avenue and was detained in handcuffs. Aguayo was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on October 23rd, jail records show. He has one bond totaling $30,000 and he posted bail on October 25th. Obituary. Brenda Susan O'Shield Tautier, Odessa. Brenda Susan O'Shield Tautier, 64, passed away on Friday, October 22nd. Susan was born in Odessa, Texas, on December 31st, 1956, to parents Louis and Billy O'Shield. Susan is survived by her husband, Dale Tautier, her stepchildren, Derek, his wife, Christy, and their children. Susan's mother, Billie Jean O'Shield of Odessa, sisters Sharon O'Shield of Odessa, Starla, and husband Jimmy Albright of Odessa, and their children. Dr. Jimmy Braswell will be officiating the graveside services for the family. There will be a graveside service held at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa at 1 p.m. on Friday, October 29th. In lieu of flowers, please make a donation to the charity of your choice in Susan Trottier's name. Death Notice. Felipe A. Gonzalez, Lubbock. Felipe A. Gonzalez, 63, of Odessa, Texas, died Saturday, October 23rd in Lubbock, Texas. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. October 29th, 2021 at Elizabeth Ann Catholic Church. Visitation will be held at Frank W. Wilson Chapel from 4 to 8 p.m. Thursday, October 28th. Rosary will begin at 7 p.m. Arrangements are by Frank W. Wilson Funeral Home, 7509 of Odessa.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, October 28. Curtis Shaw Sr. was one of 10 children born to Iris Sampson Shaw and Willie Shaw on June 12, 1941 in Midland. He attended school at Carver High School. He worked for the Midland Independent School District, and he was a father and grandfather to many. At the time of his passing, he was a faithful member of Northside Church of Christ. He was preceded in death by his wives, Jewel Shaw, Dean Shaw, and Nell Shaw, three brothers, James Marshall, Raymond Shaw, and David Shaw, four sisters, Willie Jean Jackson, Betty Banks, Irene Hunt, and May Sue Curl. He is survived by his children, Otis Taylor of Arlington, Texas, Herschel Glenn Shaw of Marlin, Texas, Curtis Shaw Jr. in Midland, as well as a host of grandchildren and extended family. Visitation will be held October 29th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Funeral service will be held October 30th at 11 a.m. at Northside Church of Christ, with Brother Rodney Taylor Sr. officiating. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home are honored to serve the Shaw family at this time. Gracie Lee Gilbert, age 69, passed away on October 18th. Wake service will be held October 29th at 7 p.m. at Mount Rose Full Gospel Church, 211 Tyler Street in Midland. Funeral service October 30th at 11 a.m. at Stonegate Fellowship Church, 6000 West Wadley Avenue in Midland. Interment will take place November 2nd at 10 a.m. at Dallas-Fort Worth National Cemetery at 2000 Mount Creek Parkway in Dallas. The major funeral home and chapel of Fort Worth, Texas, is handling the arrangements. Joseph John Salinas, born in Carn City, Texas, on October 9, 1960, to Josephine Salinas and to his late father, Raymond Salinas, on October 16, 2021, he passed away. Funeral Mass will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, October 29th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. He is survived by his family, his loving wife Tony, as well as Christian, Ryan, Scott, and Sean. Gabrielle Lara, age 30, of Midland, passed away October 25th. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Monday, November 1st, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, November 2nd, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Steve Stingray Carter, age 64, of Midland, passed away October 26th. The family will receive guests from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Friday, October 29th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 30th, at Resthaven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, October 23, 2021. Viewpoints. Williamson deserves call to Hall. Midland ISD has inducted the greatest class to its Hall of Legends. Good luck following up a class that includes two NFL players, two Olympians, and a state championship miler, local legend, who's given back considerably to our community. As I wrote here before, there was no weak link in this group. There will be other classes, and I can't wait to celebrate names like football all-timers David Leverton, Darrell Davis, Tyrone Thurman, and John Norman, track state champions John McAfee and Victoria Lucas, softball superstar Emily Hayes and Lindsay Johnson, arguably the city's greatest girls soccer player. And let's not go too long without inducting baseball coach Barry Russell. But today I'm making a pitch for someone different, a person who never played a sport, but did more to recognize the truly great Midland ISD athletes, teams, than anyone in our city's history. It's time to call former Reporter Telegram sports editor Terry Williamson, an MISD legend. Terry will always have a special place in the Midland sports annals because he wrote a considerable number of the chapters. State championships? He was courtside with Jack Stevenson and on the sidelines with John Parchman, making sure our history books would identify their teams as the best in the state. Legendary figures? He was there cleaning up the quotes from Earl Miller and writing stories about Spike Dyke's teams that beat Permian not once, but twice in the same season. Most may forget that there was a time when girls' sports weren't so plentiful, but Terry made sure that when the Title IX sports arrived on the sports landscape in the mid-1990s, the Reporter Telegram would be ready to cover it. He actually brought me to do it. Don't hold that against him, MISD. When the Lee softball team went to the state tourney in 1995, we were there. When the girls' soccer teams went to the regional tournament, we were there. When the Lee girls won the state title in 1993, Terry was there to cover that incomparable sports story. Terry was old school in his reporting of sports. Trained by Ted Battles, he carried on the tradition of telling great sports stories. He treated players and coaches with respect. Sure, he covered his fair share of teams that weren't very good, but Terry showed the rest of us that you don't make your name at their expense. Most of all, Terry helped Midland celebrate the athletic accomplishments of its public school teams, the hallmark of a good community newspaper. For years, there were plenty of sports pages hanging up around campus or put together as part of one's scrapbook. And on those celebratory presentations, there was a good chance a reader saw Terry's byline. While the rest of us tried to follow in the footsteps of Ted Battles and Terry Williamson, it was always difficult, if not impossible, to measure up. They did their job so well. Ted, he's already a member of Midland's ISD's Hall. Now, it is Terry's time.
Osteoarthritis affects cartilage and more. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm a 60-year-old healthy man. I am very active as a team roper. My arthritis bothers me every day, every waking hour. We ride 2 to 3 days a week. I take a tramadol with acetaminophen 37.5/325 and a 500 milligram acetaminophen in the mornings. This works well during the day, but if I take it at night, it keeps me from sleeping. Would 150 milligrams of diflucanac be safe to take before bed? I've had two surgeries for bone spurs in my right elbow and left shoulder. What causes bone spurs? TH. Answer. It seems you have osteoarthritis, the most common type of arthritis. Osteoarthritis affects all parts of the joint. This is damage to and progressive destruction of the articular cartilage, which is the smooth, load-bearing portion of the joint. Loss of cartilage and joint space, especially in the knee, is one of the primary ways we establish severity of osteoarthritis. The bone is also affected. When collagen on the bone around the margins of the joint turn bony, this is called osteophytes or bone spurs. It's not the cause of the inflammation, but rather a result of the inflammation in the joint affected by osteoarthritis. Damage to ligaments and tendons are also common in joints affected by osteoarthritis. Rodeo roping is a high-impact activity. Damage to the joint, such as a ligament, from trauma can start the process of osteoarthritis. When I see a person with only one joint affected by osteoarthritis, I wonder if it's this post-traumatic osteoarthritis as opposed to people with many joints, where age, gender, joint anatomy, and being overweight are major risk factors.
This is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, October 28th. Female workers prefer to maintain professionalism. Dear Abby, my co-workers and I want to know how to handle customers who ask us out. We are an all-female staff at a liquor store, and our job is kind of like being a bartender without pouring drinks. Our customers are happy to see us after a long day at work and sometimes misinterpret our excellent customer service skills as flirting and ask us out. It is sometimes a very uncomfortable situation because we are paid to be kind and don't know how to say no without causing a loss of business for our company or possibly putting ourselves in a dangerous situation. Can you give us some guidance on how to delicately handle these moments? Signed, On the Job in Missouri. Dear On the Job, a polite turndown to the invitation would be, thank you for the compliment, but I never date a customer. It's against the rules. Dear Abby, I have a longtime friend who is an amazing person. He has almost every positive attribute anyone could want. He's smart, hardworking, successful, strong, and athletic, fit and attractive, generous, witty, etc. His only flaw is a big one. He lacks empathy and is sometimes very insensitive. Over the years, on a number of occasions, he has said or done things that left me feeling humiliated. He doesn't seem to understand that it isn't how generous you were to them. People remember how you make them feel. He has few real friends who can tolerate him, and some have walked out of his life. I'm on the verge of doing the same thing. How can I get him to change his behavior before it is too late? We're both older men. Signed, Humiliated in Albuquerque. Dear Humiliated, point out to this person that, more than once, he has said or done things that made you feel humiliated. While you're at it, mention that this unpleasant trait is what has caused Tom, Dick, Harry, Sleepy, and Grumpy to walk out of his life. Then tell him you no longer intend to allow it to happen to you, and if it happens again, you will join the others. Dear Abby, I am looking for advice about whether I'm violating any ethics while walking my dogs. I walk my two dogs almost every day so the dogs can perform their business. I always pick up what they leave behind, as I don't like having any dog's business left on my lawn. During these walks, I pass trash containers on the street that belong to my neighbors. Sometimes I place my dog's business in their trash containers. Since my walks are long, it's not convenient to carry the used bags all the way home. Is this wrong to do? Signed, Doggy Business. Dear Doggy, what you are doing is a big no-no. Many homeowners feel as territorial about their trash receptacles as you do your lawn. If you think I'm exaggerating, let a few of those homeowners catch you in the act. Readers, do you agree with me? One of my staff members feel that if the container is on the curb waiting pickup, there is no harm.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.